stumble. And won't it be fun though to get lost? Just a little bit rough. From time to time I blunder. From time to time I win just because I can.
Greetings, everyone. Do you know this voice? Do I know those ears? It's Bicycle Mark, also known as Mark Fonseca Rendeiro, coming to you from the Netherlands, no longer in Amsterdam, but in a town, possibly a city, called Haarlem. Yes, the Haarlem with two A's, which I guess came before the Haarlem uptown in New York City. Nice to be with you, especially considering how long it's been. I think it was earlier this year when I came to you with a few interview podcasts. And if you're new to this scene, I am a podcaster from the time when podcasts didn't necessarily have a niche. The niche was life. My niche was I have this wonderful network of friends who did interesting and do interesting things, and I could share their passion or with you. I could share their work. And that was the podcast for the better part of 15 years, I think. Maybe 18 years, now that I think about it, if we're still going. But here I am all these years later and all these months later since last I came to you, and doing okay, still in the beautiful ups and tough downs of fatherhood. My child is now almost two. We're a few months away. 2-3 months away from being 2 years old, and she says things, and she does hilarious things, but, you know, she also struggles with the usual things that even healthy children struggle with, sleep, anxieties of who knows that she can't communicate to us accurately, so it's still lots of goings-on at home, and I live hour-to-hour, day-to-day, which means the larger life questions and the larger global questions that for so many years were the subject and focus of myself as a journalist and this podcast as a global program, they've kind of fallen by the wayside, if I'm being honest. And I say that with full understanding that I'm in a time where there is a escalation of a conflict that has been ongoing for a very, very long time, certainly in my lifetime. I'm referring, of course, to what's happening in Gaza, in Israel, in that region, and then all the alliances and people involved, countries involved, companies involved. It's just a web of humanity somehow. But unfortunately, it lacks maybe that essential part of humanity, which is kindness. I'm sure it's somewhere in there. Acts of kindness are going on right now. Try to keep that in mind. I do. But at the same time, I'm focused, as I said, on what happens in my home, in my community, because that is my capacity right now. And, you know, if you check out the social medias, there's a lot of discussion. I think it's discussion. I don't know. It might also just be projection. What else do you call it when you just put a message out? Sometimes in a normal voice, sometimes in a yelling voice, sometimes in a whispering voice. So there's a lot of reminding everyone that you need to have an opinion. You need to speak up. My opinion is that I need to raise a good human. It won't be easy in this world. It isn't now, and it won't be in the future. So if I can do a good job as a father, we may have a chance. Nah, that's a cop-out maybe. I have opinions about what's going on, but, you know, for someone who's been publishing and putting out their opinions carefully for a better part of 20 years, there is fatigue, and there is a certain, you might call it cynicism, I just call it experience. Every time something seems like we've never been here before, there's so many aspects that we have seen before, and that's still unfortunate. It's still sad. But I don't share the opinion that everything is new or unprecedented. I think cruelty is unfortunately still a specialty of our world. It's not the only specialty, but it's one of the louder ones. You'll all recall that among my experiences was two lovely tours in Afghanistan. And by tours, I mean I was a tourist. No, I was a worker. I was teaching people to do this, what I'm doing now, maybe. And even then, it occurred to me over and over again in small and large ways that the peace that existed, the kindnesses that existed, were fragile. And it's not, you don't have to be in Afghanistan to be fragile as a peace, as a cohesion. I think that they're fragile everywhere, but certainly specific regions of our world are more susceptible. When it falls apart hard, and the suffering is great in the terms of the volume of it, the amount of people who suffer. And that's a little different. I mean, we may have some disagreements here in the Netherlands, but when people disagree with each other, they don't quite do what some fighting parties in this world are doing right now. So there's that. That's me addressing that. but I have been missing the microphone. That's why I'm here. I don't have an outline. I don't have a guiding document. I don't have an interview lined up. I find it extremely hard to line up interviews, whereas that was my thing. And I have all these tools. I have the calendar planner. I have the online video conversations. I mean, imagine nowadays you have per day upwards of 4-8 video calls with people and you think nothing of it. It's normal. Whereas when I started doing this podcast, I had to sometimes explain to people how a video call would work, what software you needed, calm them down about using of image or the fact that this didn't actually use images, but we might in our conversation, turning off the image for the sake of audio quality. It's crazy to consider how far we've come and what is now normal and what was then so much work. And then there's the idea of podcasting in general, the concept that is now so familiar, that is now a job for so many people. Whereas for well over a decade, I tried to make it my job with some success, but also tried to explain to people that this was my job, this is what I wanted to do, with lots of confused looks and the occasional yay and the occasional encouragement and those who believed in it. But all these years later, I am not a professional podcaster. I work for a nonprofit organization helping with communication, which is what this exercise has often been about, but it's also very personal. It harkens back to diaries, to stream of consciousness, to blogs, for those who remember those, and the freedom to talk with people, not just talk and then let it just fly, but also to communicate with people, the idea that people would leave comments back in the day, that people would share experiences calmly. We do not live in that world anymore, at least not the sort of majority or the critical mass that exists on the internet is busy with something else, not these rewarding engagements. It is interesting maybe when now as people are disillusioned with social media or some social media platforms, what they'll do next or what they're trying to do. I see a reemergence of websites to some extent or forums or sites that host forums. Will that last? I'm not sure. Is it working as well as it used to? I don't think so. I think we saw peak community engagement, and now we're on to hordes of people with pitchforks and torches and emotional outbursts. And there's a reason for it. And I think that our world, unfortunately, is structured in such a way that there's a lot of struggling people. Even the ones that have the resources, money, shelter, even those people who could be considered lucky are filled with problems, with struggles that you don't see necessarily. And that is unfortunate and seemingly unnecessary thing. You know, like, we have so much in this world, but we are not able to make it work for everyone. Or more people, at least. If you can't make it work for everyone, try harder to reach more people. Yeah. So here I am. Here I sit. I'm still podcasting somehow, and still thinking about podcasting. I think I spend more time thinking about podcasting than actually podcasting. Is that something that good creative people do, think a lot about their art? Because I consider this my art, even if maybe it's not seen as anything particularly impressive or unique or beautiful. It's just my voice in a format that is consumable and forgettable. and yeah, you can just throw it away, or it gets thrown away automatically thanks to your podcast player. So yeah, you know, the state of the world, the state of my household, love, by the way, being a father, it's so exciting, and it hits you in a sort of spot you didn't know you had. As they say, you've heard people say this, I'll spare you the details, because I remember what it was like when I wasn't a father, and I did not think I would be one, and that was fine too. Now I'm a little bit preachy about joy, which, you know, I had a relationship with joy before, but it's different now, and it's I know a new level of joy. That's pretty cool. Despite everything, by the way, despite everything of the world, I come home, or rather, I'm home working, but my child comes home, and poof, everything is wiped away that is bad. Whether it's for a brief moment or for hours, there is no problem. There is just these hands and this hug and this laughter. And I don't know, if you can get it from a niece or a nephew or a neighbor, oh, I wish that neighbors would share the joy more often with those who don't have it, don't know about it, which is fine, but it could be very rewarding. Yeah, I kind of enjoy that kind of, what is it? Because I'm a parent, I'm more easily allowed to talk to other kids. We've come to a place in Western society where, especially men, because of the horrible acts of some, it's hard to be, I still remember this, it's hard to be a man alone, or appearing somewhere alone, and then talk to someone else's children, even, you know, with adults around. It's still suspicious, it's odd, and I wish it weren't. I wish that adults, with or without children, could communicate with children, because it's a lot of fun. It's all the things you've heard positive-wise. It's funny, it makes you think, makes you see the world differently, it makes you appreciate a lot of things that you take for granted, because they're such great observers of humanity. In the end, the best newspapers, were children able to write them, would probably be coming from there, from that age group, the best observers, who don't even know fully what they're looking at, but can tell you what they're looking at. And yeah, you have to stop and notice with them. They make you. So it's pretty cool. You've heard all this before. I have to say, in terms of podcasts, I still listen to so much. And maybe one side effect of podcasts going mainstream is I feel like I have such a broad amount of choices. Thankfully, some of our independent, I was going to say brothers and sisters, but let's not be so, what is that, simple? Some of our fellow humans who are still independent, still not selling things or still not owned by something larger, they're still producing podcasts, and I so appreciate them. Spent my afternoon listening to Madge Weinstein. You know her well, and if you don't know her work, you're missing out, and that's fine with me because I enjoy it. I feel a special relationship with both Madge and the program, but I think it's something, if other people could unlock it, they would really enjoy it. And also my friend Tom Brousseau, who I'll hit up here with a song at the end of our program, who's long let me use his music with permission and so forth, now has a podcast. He's having a public radio program in North Dakota. Yeah, North Dakota, even though I think he's not based in North Dakota, but it goes over, and that's where he's from. And it's about folk music. It's the Great American Folk Show, and I'm so pleased that it's now a podcast. I'm excited to hear my friend, but also to hear excellent music, that, you know, touches my soul. Yeah. Yeah, I said that. And, you know, then it's just a myriad of other podcasts that bring intrigue and laughter, because I'm looking for it all the time. Maybe you can tell there's something about comedy and making people laugh or being silly or being crazy that I appreciate that people try, even if I don't always get it. I just appreciate the attempt at jokes, and I try not to come down on those who maybe fail to make me laugh, but you can clearly tell are trying, or to judge too harshly a joke that I just don't get. I still find a lot of joy in the attempt to be funny. I'm fascinated by the process as well. So comedians are still, I consider them my people, and I'm not even a comedian, nor am I all that funny. I mean, you know, I can be silly, but that's about where I'm at. Anyway, it's one thing that does still guide me, this podcast, my life, my meal schedule, is the family unit, the household. So I gotta keep running it, and that means I gotta hit stop very shortly. But I wanted to put out a signal, say hi, wish you well, and if you don't agree with some of the things I've said, I hope we can still be acquaintances, if not friends. I hope we can still connect through a podcast, because I want to make more, and I miss my audience, who may you may be a part of, and I also miss the possibility of talking to new people with old or new ideas, either one. I'm into both. And or maybe with no ideas. It's also valid, no ideas on something. Maybe that's where I'm at. But I hope in your world that sadness isn't too heavy, and that the occasional joys, wherever they come from, whoever they come from, that they're there, and or you seek them out if you're really lacking that. There's nothing wrong with seeking out some joy in dark times. And we live in a world that's, well, mostly dark times. So you gotta find joy. Or joy maybe finds you. Wow. Let's consult my dear friend, Tom Brusseau, on this subject. I'll talk to you soon. Citizenreporter.org is the podcast, is the website. Social media, maybe. Podcast, yes. Subscribe. I'll see you.
As if to say, I have arrived. Isn't it against the nature of such a thing to be staring down a human being? I thought. It can't be looking at me. That's impossible. After I finished my morning routine, I gave another check, and sure enough, it was still there. Only this time, its wings were in a full stretch, a span of 6 feet or more, bearing to me its gloriously irritated bald red head, a plump, black, glistening torso, and an even blacker area one might refer to as the wing pits. But that area might not be called a color at all, but a concept, a gulf, a coffin. I tell you, I was struck with such fear and a terrifying feeling that I was going to be the one to fill in those gulfs that my hair felt as frozen as wet hair in winter. Well, that's just perfect. This is not how I planned starting my morning, I mouthed to the bird before slapping together the curtains of the window. A bird is following me. It sounds like a turkey vulture, a friend told me. And they love dead meat. It's waiting for you to die. But that was last month, and I'm still here. Plus, I don't feel sick, and I don't want to die. Wasn't there any white to the bird? Another friend questioned. Because a red-headed bird on a utility pole, to me, sounds an awful lot like a woodpecker. I reiterated the frightful length of its wingspan, and no reply. My sister put it to me like this. The bird is your animal totem. But sister, I responded, would an animal totem swoop down like that on someone, close enough to remove the eyeballs from the eye sockets if it wanted to with its sharp curled talons? Would an animal totem switch its tactics? One day stalk by air, the next by sidewalk. Sister, I finished, have you ever had a bird that size or any size run after you? It's intimidating. A bird is following me, but why? What did I ever do to you, oh bird? Where have I gone wrong in life? The whole ordeal has got me thinking just what kind of a person I must be to deserve being followed by a bird. And all of this just makes my head hurt. Perhaps the mystery will remain unsolved. One thing's for sure, other mysteries in my life have been stirred up, provoked, and now I have more than I care to be thinking about. For example, why I fail in relationships, why I bite my nails, and why can't I picture the future and see me living happily? I've always been able to do that, to picture the future, but it's like it's lost to me now. Each generated thrust of wind from its flapping wings knocking against my face reminds me of that measurement of eternity, where a speck of dust swept off a mountain by the wings of a bird is equal to 1 second of eternity. Perhaps it's all related to time, meaning so long as I am here, the bird will continue. If so, that could mean I won't die young, but live long, very long. Well, I don't want to die, but I don't want to live long either. It leaves me sparkling, clean bones of little common creatures, found not at the doorstep like the offering of a cat, but on the seats of my outside furniture on my balcony. Some of the bones I've been able to identify, like a squirrel, a rat, and a sparrow. One set of bones, however, gave me much intrigue. And so I brought it in a shoebox to the science department at a nearby college, and a professor there commented that it was an easy one to solve. And then he said, "Say hello to iguana iguana." And then he added, "Or green iguana." And at that moment, my heart sank, for I knew that that's exactly what happened to the next-door neighbor's pet iguana, which the next-door neighbor kept out on his balcony during the warm season. Lord, how could that have not been apparent to me? My dirty, rotten, no-good, goddamn animal totem devoured the next-door neighbor's pet iguana. How terrible. How awful. A bird is following me. I decided to take a trip to Texas, and it was there all the way up until the cab dropped me off and I ducked into the airport, even on the wing of the very plane during the boarding process. Of course, it was not there for me when I touched down in Amarillo. That would have been unnatural. However, given enough time, I'll bet it could detect its way to me wherever that may be. No distance is too far. Birds, I have learned, are that keen. For the time being, it remains my problem on a local level. It follows me to work, to the bar when I go, to the ball game, to the church. And otherwise, as I've nearly stated, it cannot defy certain laws. It cannot travel at the speed of an airplane, nor could it likely withstand very cold temperatures. But I wouldn't want that now anyway. But winter's right around the bend. And I fantasize of it trying to make it through the harsh January. It wouldn't last. Once it froze over, I would burn it down to ash and be done with it. But like I said, I no longer want that. I have come to believe that its life and mine are somehow intertwined. In other words, if it dies, I die. I say again, I don't want to die. So now I have this extra worry about what's going to happen when it does start getting colder. If my life force depends upon its life force, should I move to a warmer place like Amarillo, McAllen, El Paso? A bird is following me. Now I've been watching it 12 weeks and I've noticed it keeps a certain routine with sheer regularity. It leaves its stoop around sunup and returns 30 minutes later. So I decided to follow the bird. While it lifted itself off of the utility pole with 1, 2, 3, 4 flaps of its wings to a suitable height to take its soar, I slipped out of my apartment and down the stairs to the street, and I tried my best keeping after it, losing it once at the end of Dupree and 4th, and just about getting hit by a car in my pursuit, only to recover it on a chance guess direction of Gordon Street, Then in a full run at Riverside Park, I saw it drop in elevation to the river, near where a smaller river dumps into the river. And as fast as I could, I booked it to the fork in the river, where the tall cotton trees are. And there, in one of the cottonwood trees, was a whole lot of birds, just like it. Not one differed in the slightest from the other, just a collection of gloriously bald, irritated red heads and plump, black, glistening torsos. It hasn't been the one bird following me all this time, but the lot of them just split in turns.